Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Today, we're going to talk about what caused the baby formula shortage in the U.S., how Republicans blamed it on Biden, and how they're blocking efforts to actually solve it. And I interview Fox LA's Alex Michelson about California's upcoming races, some of the most dangerous winners of Republican primaries, and whether he thinks California Governor Gavin Newsom will eventually throw his hat in the ring for president. I'm Brian Tyler Cohen, and you're listening to No Lie. Okay, so I want to focus on an issue that's really overtaken the country in the last couple of weeks. It's one of the more visceral issues. It is the baby formula shortage. Now, just a quick explainer on what landed us here. In February, Abbott Nutrition, which is the largest infant formula manufacturer in the U.S., saw one of its largest production facilities out in Sturgis, Michigan, shut down after bacterial contamination was linked to 4 infants getting sick and 2 infants dying. As a result of losing one of Abbott's largest facilities, there was obviously a shortage in infant formula. That's just basic supply and demand, right? When you take away one major supplier, you're left with an inevitable shortage. Couple that with the fact that the U.S. produces 98% of the infant formula that's consumed here in the U.S., meaning this isn't a market where farm producers can fill in gaps in the supply. And remember that Trump's USMCA deal that replaced NAFTA actually sought to reduce baby formula production in Canada by preventing it from being exported into the U.S. Cut to 4 years later, and this is what America First looks like when the entire baby formula market is owned by just a couple of companies here in the U.S. without the ability to import formula to fill in any supply gaps. And we can get into why our antitrust regulations in this country are a complete failure, but that's another episode entirely. Anyway, you will be shocked to hear that Republicans have used this opportunity to attack who else but Joe Biden. Even though the White House had zero impact on this, and the only impact that the federal government did have was that the FDA shut down the Sturgis plant because they'd actually cut a ton of corners and ignored a bunch of warning signs, and their formula was killing babies. So I know that Republicans love to vilify government bureaucracy, but that government bureaucracy saved God knows how many lives by intervening. So Republicans are using every waking minute to slam the left because babies are hungry, and so why not exploit that really visceral crisis for partisan gain? And so every day it's, this is Joe Biden's America, this never happened when Trump was in office, Biden doesn't care about babies, and on and on. The attacks are bullshit, but that still doesn't mean we don't move to fix them, right? So House Democrats introduced legislation. They introduced the Infant Formula Supplemental Appropriations Act that provided $28 million in emergency funding to the FDA. And some people are complaining about this, that this isn't money for formula, it's for government bureaucrats. That $28 million funds FDA inspection staff. It provides funding for those working on formula issues. It stops dangerous, fraudulent formula from entering the U.S. marketplace. If none of those are in place, if there are no safety measures put in place beforehand because we didn't want to fund them, then what stops a pre-existing crisis from going from bad to worse? This not only helps ensure that we can restock the shelves safely, but it stops the issue from happening again. And yet, when the bill came up for a vote, it passed 231 to 192 with every single no vote coming from Republicans. Consider, too, the Access to Baby Formula Act that ensured that low-income families could continue to buy formula with WIC benefits, women, infant, and children benefits. That passed 414 to 9 with all of those no votes being Republicans. And, of course, you can already guess which Republicans, from Matt Gaetz to Marjorie Taylor Greene. In other words, you've got this party that's taken every opportunity to complain about a problem and pin that blame on Joe Biden for an issue that he quite literally had nothing to do with. And yet when Democrats actually offered a solution, you've got a parade of Republicans falling over themselves to vote against it. And the reason here is obvious. It's because problems like this one, which they falsely claim is a governing failure by Democrats, help them politically. Republicans don't want the baby formula shortage to be fixed any more than they want gas prices to go down or immigration to stop. They want these problems to subsist because they are useful as talking points, which is why Republicans quite literally never have a single solution for any of these problems. They'll hold press conferences until they're blue in the face, but There's no legislation, no bills, no ideas, no fixes. They would rather Americans continue to get hurt because that helps them politically. And if you think both parties do it, consider this. When Trump was president, every single Democrat voted for the $2 trillion CARES Act, the initial COVID relief package, even though doing so would invariably help Donald Trump. But when Biden took office, and all we gotten after almost a year of this pandemic was one relief package, and the Democrats introduced the American Rescue Plan, zero Republicans voted for that, because hurting Biden was more important than helping Americans. So when these Republicans stand at their podiums and go off about how criminal it is that there's a baby formula shortage in the U.S., it is proof that they understand the seriousness of this issue. They understand that it's life and death, which makes it all the worse when they turn around and vote against the solutions, because they are admitting that they want an issue that serious and scary not to get fixed. And that's about as damning an indictment as you'll ever find. Next up, I'm joined by Alex Michelson.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, now we've got the host of Fox LA's The Issue Is and The Issue Is podcast, Alex Michelson. Alex, thank you for coming back on.
Brian, always great to be with you.
So let's start in our beautiful home state of California, and actually our beautiful home city of Los Angeles. We've got a mayoral race fast approaching on June 7th. It's looking like a battle between progressive candidate Karen Bass and former Republican turned Democrat Rick Caruso. So what's the state of that race right now?
You would say moderate candidate Rick Caruso. Well, first up, I think people should think about elections in California and so many other parts of the country differently. I think the right way to say it is the last day to vote is June 7th, because ballots went out to every single registered voter in LA County and in the entire state of California in the beginning of May. So a lot of people have already voted in this race, and some people may have their ballot, you know, looking at it right now as they listen to this podcast. And so it's kind of a rolling election. In terms of the state of this race, there, you know, were several candidates in this race, but it really is seemed to be coming down to these two. Karen Bass, somebody well known across the country for a minute. She was considered to be Joe Biden's VP candidate. She was the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus during the George Floyd incident. She was the author of the George Floyd Justice in Policing bill. Somebody who was the speaker of California's assembly when Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor and the first woman to ever do that. She was a community organizer, a nurse practitioner who worked in emergency rooms. And after the LA riots, she founded the Community Coalition, which is still in place and is something that really has helped at the time with the crack epidemic and helped for years and years in helping to educate young people in the Black community. That's Karen Bass. On the other hand, you've got Rick Caruso. Somebody who is well known for anybody who's ever traveled to Southern California. You may not know his name, but you probably know his properties. There's a chance you've been to The Grove, which is a big shopping mall in LA that is visited by as many people as Disneyland every year. That's how many people go to The Grove and the Americana and the Palisades Village, all these different spots, which people, whenever you come to LA, you probably stop by one of these spots. He's got billions of dollars. And he had some experience in LA politics in the past. He was the president of the police commission. He also worked on DWP and the Coliseum Commission. But he's trying to run this thing as an outsider, as somebody who's not a part of the political establishment. And the big issues that he's touching on in this city, which are big issues also around the country, are crime, which is a huge issue across the country. And the big issue here in LA and in California is homelessness. It's issue number one. The LA Times put out a poll that showed more than 90% of people saw homelessness as issue number one. And the problem here is so bad that it is causing some people who have been progressives for their entire life to say, hey, maybe this isn't working, or maybe we need somebody new, or maybe we need to try something different. And it's created this opening for Rick Caruso. But I think that the most important thing when talking about this race is just to talk about the money. Rick Caruso has spent $25 million so far on a primary for mayor. That's shattering all records. Karen Bass's campaign just did their first ad buy this week of $660,000, which is a significant ad buy, but still, how can you compete with $25 million?
Right.
And for anybody that's lived anywhere near this city, they've seen Rick Caruso's ad on TV over and over again. It's on YouTube ads. It's probably on an ad for this show somehow. I'm sure he's paid Brian, and you're probably doing a read for Rick Caruso at some point. I mean, the guy is everywhere. And Karen Bass, who came into this as the big favorite for this race, because it's been hard for her to compete with that. So you've got this situation. To finish up the longest answer in the history of this podcast, where June 7th comes, and the way the race works is the top two, if somebody gets over 50% on the June 7th ballot, they become the mayor. The race is over. If somebody doesn't, then the top two people have a runoff in November. And because Caruso has been able to spend so much money, what he's trying to do right now is to get to 50% on June 7th, end this thing before a lot of the Democratic interest groups can get together and get all their attacks up against Rick Caruso.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have today. Alex, thank you so much for joining. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, I have, first of all, I have not taken any money. I'm kidding.
That was a joke. Yeah.
But second of all, I've actually gotten ads in my mailbox almost on a daily basis for Rick Caruso. So it's wild. I mean, I've never, ever, ever seen political advertising to this degree in LA. You had touched on the fact that this contest is pretty much centered on crime and homelessness. Mm-hmm. How do voters seem to be reconciling having someone like Rick Caruso, who is positioning himself as being tough on those top issues of crime and homelessness, with the fact that this is still Los Angeles? It's the progressive bastion of the state and in many ways the country. And the guy was a Republican until the moment he decided he wanted to be in politics.
Well, I think our friends in San Francisco would like to say that they're the progressive bastion of the state. But to the point, though, I think because Rick Caruso has had $25 million of ads on and Karen Bass has had almost none, most voters don't know that he was a Republican.
Yeah,
I mean, the negative ad that finally started to air this week, finally, thanks to Jeffrey Katzenberg pumping in $600,000, talks about Rick Caruso was a Republican and he was not necessarily pro-choice and he donated to Mitch McConnell and Mitt Romney and all that stuff. But that just started airing like yesterday.
Imagine how many more ads we could have had if he never did Quibi.
He's been on the air. Caruso has been on the air basically by himself. And so what his message has been, hasn't been, I used to be a Republican. His right. message is homelessness is bad. Crime is bad. Corruption is bad. I'm an outsider and I can fix it. And you know what? Right now, that's a pretty good message. He also has hired the best Democratic ad firm in the state. The guys that work for Gavin Newsom and Alex Padilla and Kamala Harris and Robert Garcia and so many other successful campaigns. And this guy, Ace Smith, who runs that firm, his specialty is negative ads against people, tying them to Republican extremism. Well, he's working for Caruso. So, if he was working for somebody else, they would be making those ads. But he's got that guy on his payroll.
Yeah.
So, that hasn't really been an issue yet. Now, if And that's part of the reason why Caruso wants to win so bad on June 7th, because I don't think they're going to have enough time or money to make that a huge issue now. If they have a few more months and they've got more money and Bass is able to consolidate everybody and all the interest groups get involved, they might be able to tribalize the race, make it more of a partisan thing, and have that be successful in the fall. But right now, that doesn't really seem to be the case.
You know, while we're on the subject of these bizarre bedfellows in California, you actually just spoke with Snoop Dogg this week. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, so this gets to the point that, like, because issues are so bad when it comes to crime and homelessness, people are coming forward with weird collections of people. So this week, Rick Caruso invited me out to cover this event with him and this woman named Sweet Alice Harris, who has been this sort of bedrock community activist for 40 years. And she says that Rick Caruso has been funding a lot of her good work and her philanthropy for years. And Caruso has, by the way, he's been incredibly generous in South LA and Skid Row and other places for years and years. I mean, I covered that myself 15 years ago, Rick Caruso, before he got into politics. So she backed him, which was kind of seen as a bit of a slap in the face to Karen Bass, who would be the first Black woman ever to be LA's mayor, that this very strong, powerful, popular Black woman is backing the rich white guy, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
But while we're in the middle of that, he says, okay, Snoop Dogg's on Zoom. And I'm like, what? And then we go over there and I say, hi, you know, and he's talking about how great Sweet Alice is. And I'm like, is he endorsing Caruso? So I said, what the hell? When am I ever going to get the opportunity to be on Zoom with Snoop Dogg? I'm going to snap up and say something. So I said, hi, Snoop. I'm Alex from Fox. He's like, what up, Alex? It's like, this is so weird. But then he said, yes, I'm endorsing Caruso. He said, he's the real deal. He's been with her for all these years. You got to be there in the community. So, you know, Caruso is not Donald Trump, even though some people might want to make him out to be. That being said, also, Karen Bass has been so involved in the community for so many decades as well. You know, it'll be really interesting to see what happens in the months ahead.
A lot of this also has ties to the LA DA race. There's a recall effort against George Gascon, the LA DA, right now. Can you give a rundown on why that is?
Yeah, and that's become a big national issue as well. Tucker Carlson made a whole documentary about it, which I'm sure many of your listeners also subscribe to Fox Nation.
That's right.
A lot of cross-section, and it was the most streamed documentary in the history of Fox Nation. So there's a lot of anger on the right about George Gascon, but there's also some anger on the left as well. George Gascon is a progressive prosecutor. He comes from San Francisco, where he used to be the DA there. There's another DA in San Francisco named Chesa Boden, who is facing a recall election in June. There is an effort underway for Gascon to be recalled that has hundreds of thousands of signatures, and they think that that's going to eventually get onto the ballot as well. Just yesterday, one of the LA County supervisors, Catherine Barger, endorsed that effort. And this is part of this push and pull that we've seen in California and so many other states as well. This idea of too much crime punishment, not enough crime punishment. In California, back in the 90s, we had pretty harsh crime laws put into place after a big outbreak of crime, which, by the way, crime was way worse then than it is now. Things like the three strikes law and you're out. Our jails became so overcrowded in this state that the United States Supreme Court ruled that it was cruel and unusual punishment and required that they get people out of some of these jails. So then we started passing things, including this thing called Prop 47, which was super controversial, that George Gascon actually wrote, which reduced what a felony would be in terms of stealing something. So you can steal up to $950 and it'll be a misdemeanor. And so what we've seen is that George Gascon doesn't prosecute a lot of felonies, does not believe in bail at all, does not believe in prosecuting any minors as adults, and has sort of changed the way that the DA's office worked. You know who doesn't like that? The people that work in the DA's office. There was a vote of 900 people that work in the DA's office for George Gascon, and 90%+ of them voted that he should be recalled.
Yeah.
So it's part of this larger battle in terms of progressive politics, where it is. But people like Gavin Newsom, the governor, who actually had appointed George Gascon to offices in the past, Rob Bonta, our attorney general, who's up for re-election himself, had endorsed George Gascon. But there's clearly a lot of pushback. And it's not just people on the right. Some people on the left are irritated with what's happening as well.
So let's talk about Gavin Newsom. But first, let's come back after a quick break.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, so Gavin Newsom a couple of days ago announced that California's budget surplus is expected to hit an unprecedented $97 billion. So First of all, I just got a note. We have the bluest state in the country that somehow managed to be the most fiscally responsible, which is weird because Republicans have been telling us for decades that Democrats are reckless spenders and that we need some fiscal conservative adults in the room. So just had to put that out there.
You know what Republicans would say to that, right? Not that I'm here to argue the Republican perspective. They would say that the state is way overtaxed and that it's absurd to have a $100 billion deficit. That's actually not good fiscal management. If you had a business, you wouldn't want to have a surplus that big, and that we should be taxing people less and let people spend their own money. So that's just what they would say.
They would say that, but to my point, with all of that money, we're able to like undertake projects that other states wouldn't be able to do. So what's the plan for all of this cash?
Well, some of the money is going to go back to people. Part of what the governor wants to do is do at least $18 billion going back in some sort of gas tax rebate. It's all being negotiated about how much and to who, and do rich people get it or not, and what are the caps and all that.
I believe that's a constitutional protection in California too. It's in statute that it has to come back to a certain degree to the taxpayers if we hit a certain limit,
which Newsom's team is actually arguing we haven't hit that limit, but that gets real complicated and weirdly in the weeds. But some of the money's coming back. A big chunk of the money, and what really the money should go to, is a rainy day fund, because the way that our state gets money is it's almost entirely on super wealthy people's capital gains. When the rich are doing well, the state has huge surpluses. When the rich aren't doing well, unfortunately, it looks like Wall Street could be going for a big dive, you know, the state has no money. I mean, when Jerry Brown and Arnold Schwarzenegger were governor, we had $50 billion deficits.
Yeah.
So some of it is, okay, let's put some of that money aside. Some of it is what you want to talk about is infrastructure projects and trying to modernize our infrastructure. Some of it is homelessness. There's going to be $12 billion spent to try to deal with homelessness next year, which is a record. This year it was $1 billion. Next year it's going to be 12. So when you've got $100 billion to go around, you can fund a lot of things at the same time.
In light of the impending Roe decision, California is also moving to codify abortion protections in the California Constitution and bolstering funding for out-of-state women to be able to receive care, both of which I think are worth noting here. You know, we've spoken about this. Do you think Newsom is jockeying or positioning himself to run for president?
Well, he said this week that he has, quote, sub-zero interest in running for president. And that he wants in 2024, he said 2024, that, you know, he wants Kamala Harris to be the successor to Joe Biden is what he said. Now, there is nobody in the state that really follows this stuff that actually believes that.
Yeah.
The guy clearly, like every politician, wants to be president. I mean, Brian Tyler Cohen wants to be president. At least part of him does. I mean, when you got to that, oh, you were there in the White House, in the Oval House, is there not part of you that was like, nah, this could be okay, right? I mean, part of you, even if you didn't have to run for it, if you just like appointed it, there's part of you that would want to be that.
Look, right? The White House is cool, but I wear gym shorts every day and that's cool too. So it'd be a tough decision.
Okay, we know that's a yes, just like Gavin Newsom's answer, that was BS. So yes, Gavin Newsom, or at least has thought about it. And how do you get to be a job like California governor where you haven't thought about it? At least that's my interpretation. But yes, I mean, I saw Gavin. I was with Gavin Newsom during his press conference about Roe at a Planned Parenthood in Los Angeles. We were actually going to maybe do an interview that day, and instead he did this press conference. And I've never seen him more passionate and fired up than he was that day. I think he does genuinely, passionately believe that this is a fundamental rights issue, and he's outraged by this and sees this as a stepping stone to getting rid of privacy rights, which could undo a lot of other rights. He talked about, you know, same-sex marriage, which is obviously something he's been a big proponent of since 2004. He thinks that this could potentially lead open to that being challenged again. He even talked about interracial marriage, you know, on that day. And he said in a tweet that day that this Roe issue is the definitive issue of the 2022 election, which I pushed back and said, not inflation or homelessness or anything else. And he said, for him, you know, this is a fundamental issue. And without this, you don't have all the rest of that. Yeah. So I think in his bones, he really does believe it. But there's also no doubt that he thinks that this is a big political winner for him. And clearly, issues like homelessness and inflation and all the rest of that is more complicated for the Democratic Party right now. But the polls on this, especially on a state like California, there is no doubt where the people are on this, and they are on the same page as where the governor is at.
Yeah. Well, you know, while we're on the topic of candidates, looking at some of the candidates who've won their primaries thus far across the country, you see a guy like Doug Mastriano in Pennsylvania running for governor, for example, who was literally at the Capitol on January 6th. He was subpoenaed by the January 6th committee. This guy's come out and said he could decertify every voting machine in Pennsylvania. It's basically a certainty that if a Democrat won in Pennsylvania in the presidential contest and Doug Mastriano was governor, those electoral votes under no circumstances would be granted to that Democrat. Is this just an outright acknowledgement that Republicans are rejecting liberal democracy? I mean, to nominate, like, I know, like, the questions like that can come across as like hysterical, but when you have a guy whose entire platform is rejecting illiberal democracy and he's chosen in a bellwether state, no less, like in Pennsylvania as the gubernatorial nominee for the Republican Party, is that not what the message is?
I think, you know, different people will interpret the message in different ways. I think that, you know, the big question going forward is, you know, there's a difference between a primary election and a general election. And, you know, have the Republicans just nominated somebody who's unelectable in a general election and actually given the Democrats a chance to win a race that they might not have won in a year that's not particularly favorable to Democrats. And if the people of Pennsylvania come out in the fall and reject that candidate and instead choose a different path, I think they'll be sending a message to the rest of the country that maybe that sort of thing is not the way to go.
Now, if you had to boil down what you do think the most effective message would be heading into November for both parties, what do you think it would be? Actually, I mean, I think I know what it would be for the Republican Party, but yeah, for both parties,
what do you think it would be for the Republican Party?
I mean, I think look at the economic situation, right? Like we have high gas prices and high inflation right now. I think as Democrats, you can push back and say every country in the world is dealing with inflation right now. There was just an article the other day that I read where conservatives in Canada were blaming Trudeau for all of the high prices, which I thought was ironic because I had been told on a relentless loop that it was Joe Biden's fault. So it's interesting to see every leader in charge is taking the blame for a global issue of inflation as we come out of this pandemic.
Well, if I was in charge, I would try to find a way, and I don't know if it's possible, but to actually work with Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema and say to them, okay, guys, what do you want? What do you want? Let's do, the biggest issues are inflation and cutting costs for the American people. And how can we do this? And I would pass something to go the entire year or the past 2 years and pass nothing because you can't get your own people to vote for it does not send a great message to the people of the country. So I would do something because as the Democrats, you're in charge and you can pass something and send a message to the American people that we understand the pain that you're going through. We understand that it's real, and we are going to work to cut costs for you and make life a little bit easier. And not just make it a messaging thing, but actually do something and then run on. But I'm not in charge.
Yeah, I mean, that's been a recurring theme. Everybody I've spoken with, even Representative Jayapal, deliver. That's the number one message they want to see Democrats deliver. And, you know, just with regard to what you said about Sinema, that is, of course, assuming that chaos and watching the world burn isn't her motivation in all of this.
And also, you know, we'll see what happens with Roe, and we don't know yet is what were the motivations for leaking this draft copy? And is it possible that the court has moved since that draft copy was put out and all the rest of that? But if a woman's right to choose is taken away in 25 states in this country, that is a political earthquake, and that is an issue worth running on, because that is something that the Republicans, if you notice, almost every one of their statements, and I know you noticed this, after that draft leak came out, were, oh my God, the leak, yeah. How dare they put out this leak? And nobody said, oh, we as a party for the last 50 years have run on every election as this is our big thing. We stopped Merrick Garland from getting a hearing so this could happen. We got Amy Coney Barrett in with like 3 days left so that this could happen. We have had a calculated, you know, political operation funded by some of the wealthiest people in the country with this as the goal for 50 years. And we finally made it happen. But they couldn't do that because they thought the politics of it was bad. So it was like, oh my God, how about that leak? But that's an issue. Like that is an issue worth running on. And it is a reminder to people that elections have consequences, that voting matters, that it's important to get out there, that this isn't just conceptual stuff. I think our country has gotten so used to faux outrage and bullshit and things not actually happening, and everybody wanting the issue because it's good for cable news or good for tweets, but not necessarily wanting the actual solution, that in this situation, if you actually get to the promised land of where they've been trying to go for so long, it's a reminder that, you know, that happens sometimes. The dog catches its tail or whatever it is. You know what I mean? And that could be what's happening here. And the sad part of it is as you know, and as your listeners know, this isn't a game. That's going to impact the lives of millions and millions of people. And there are women that, you know, could very well die because of this. We had a very powerful interview a couple of weeks ago, and I encourage people to listen to the Issue Is podcast or watch, find this on YouTube with Gloria Allred, talking about her experience before Roe, where she was raped in Mexico at gunpoint, got pregnant, had to have an illegal abortion, almost died in the process, and how that was her motivating factor to get involved in all the activism she has for the last 50 years. But this isn't a game, folks.
Couldn't have said it better. Alex, I would also recommend for anyone listening, check out the Issue Is podcast. Alex, thank you for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. We've got a great interview with the guys behind This Will Not Pass, that New York Times bestseller from the New York Times reporter. And so you can check that out either on my YouTube page, youtube.com/AlexMichelson, or search for The Issue Is wherever you search for podcasts. Brian, you are the man, and we can't wait to see you as president one day.
from your lips to God's ears. All right, Alex, thanks again. Thanks again to Alex. One last note, if you're new, please subscribe to the show and feel free to leave a review and also recommend it to a friend. Word of mouth is the best way to get new listeners. Okay, that's it for this episode. Talk to you next week. You've been listening to No Lie with Brian Tyler Cohen. Produced by Sam Graber. Music by Wellesley. Interviews captured and edited for YouTube and Facebook by Nicholas Nicotera. And recorded in Los Angeles, California. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on your preferred podcast app. Feel free to leave a 5-star rating and a review. And check out BrianTylerCohen.com for links to all of my other channels.